Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. A lot is at stake in California if voters do not approve Governor Jerry Brown's compromise ballot initiative to raise taxes. California state university officials recently announced plans to freeze enrollment at most campuses next year. At 8 of the 23 Cal State campuses, enrollment will be limited to several hundred transfer students. That means that high school students who are accepted to schools like Sonoma State and Cal Poly will not be admitted if the tax proposal does not pass. Total enrollment could be reduced by as many as 25,000 students during the 2013-2014 academic year. State universities have already suffered from $750 million in budget cuts this year. And if the measure does not pass, they will lose another $200 million. Now, in addition to the education sector, California's chronic budget shortfall has also affected hundreds of social safety programs for children, seniors, people with disabilities, and the poor. With California facing another $9 billion budget shortfall, Governor Brown has warned that even more cuts are on the horizon if voters do not approve this measure. Now, the latest version of the measure is the result of an 11th-hour deal between Governor Brown and the California Federation of Teachers, Unions, and Students. The revised measure would raise sales taxes by a quarter cent and raise taxes for people earning more than $250,000 a year. The campaign still needs 800,000 signatures by mid-May to qualify for the November ballot. According to a USC LA Times poll, nearly two-thirds of California voters support the proposal. So on today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by taking a look at this measure. If it passes, will it stop the cuts? How will the revenue be distributed? What happens if it doesn't pass? And do you support it? Today, we're joined by Mark Paul. He's a journalist and co-author of the book, California Crack Up, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How We Can Fix It. Mark served as deputy treasurer and policy director in the California State Treasurer's Office and as policy director for the 2006 gubernatorial campaign of Phil Angelides. And Mark Paul joins us from Sacramento. Hi, Mark. Welcome back to the show. Hello, Mark. We'll connect with Mark in a minute. We are also joined by Lenny Goldberg, leading California tax expert and executive director of the California Tax Reform Association. That's an organization that advocates for a fair taxation system in California. And Lenny also joins us from Sacramento. Hi, Lenny. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. So, yes, thanks for having me.
Hi, Lenny. Thank you for joining us. So, Lenny, I was kind of shocked to read this announcement from the California State University officials saying they will freeze enrollment. Are they being serious about this?
You know, we have had ongoing budget crises for so many years that the answer, I believe, and I don't know the specifics of their position, but it does make sense that they would be freezing enrollment, given that, you know, if you add to enrollment and you don't have any more classes and you're cutting back on your campuses already, you know, where are you going to put the students? And in some ways, you know, and I can't speak for the CSU system, but in some ways it's kind of a cruel hoax to say, yeah, come to our campus, but you can't get any of the classes that you want.
Right. Well, I was thinking that they might have made this announcement just to explain the dire situation that we're facing. If you don't pass this measure, your child might not get into Sac State.
Well, if we don't pass the measure, that is very likely. And it was interesting because I was involved in some of the focus groups on as these initiatives were being put together. And as I watched, people expressed a great deal of concern, and these are often families with younger children, that, you know, the California dream, their ability to send their kids to college is going to be out of reach. That it used to be in California that you knew if your kid, you know, somehow stayed to the straight and narrow and did pretty well, that they could get to an institution of higher education. And it was very interesting to hear from people. You know, normally you get the expressed concerns about schools and public safety, But what you heard a lot of was the concern that the university system, which was once such an ideal part of California's future, is, you know, not going to be accessible to a lot of ordinary people, and that seems to be coming true.
Yeah, and Mark, Paul, what do you think about this? It's interesting that the California State University officials connected this announcement to the tax measure on the ballot.
Well, they have the higher education segments have taken probably the biggest hit over the last decade in terms of the budget cutbacks in California. I mean, higher education and, as you mentioned in your lead-in, social services are the two parts of the California budget that don't have protection either from building of the Constitution or political protection the way the prisons do, or connected with a federal program like most healthcare spending is. So they have taken a lion's share of the cutbacks, and they are struggling in the face of those cutbacks.
So, I'm sorry, Rose. I can't hear Mark. If the board can connect us.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Well, we'll work on that. Sorry about that, Lenny. Mark was just talking about the dire situation we're taking, saying that higher education has taken the biggest hit, and unlike prisons, they don't have protection, political protection, and they don't have protection from the Constitution. So let's talk about this specific measure. Lenny, you focus on taxes 24/7. How important is this particular measure when it comes to raising revenue?
Well, you know, in this state, we are so tied up in the reason this measure is so important is because the legislature cannot do its job. Mm-hmm. And that's not because the legislature is a mess or because any of your people's representatives are not trying to do their job. It's because, as Mark has made very clear in as many ways as possible, the state of California is tied up in knots. It cannot solve its problem. It can't define its problems. It can't solve its problems. And so the result is that something pretty ordinary, like a temporary tax increase, given all the cuts, has to go to the ballot, has to be done in an elaborate initiative process, has to be written in such a way that it both attracts the voters but also handles the fiscal problems of the state of California. And I can tell you from polling that we've done that's very difficult to do, that people want to absolutely know that their money is going here to education and not to the general fund. But if it doesn't go to the general fund, then it can't help education. So what you have is a system so badly tied in knots that the ordinary business of government, which is to set tax levels and pass budgets, really is dependent on an initiative process going to the ballot, which is fraught with all kinds of problems in terms of the way to distort it, what's a reasonable tax, what people will vote for, how the money is spent. And so, you know, it is extremely important because we have been unable. In 2008, we passed temporary taxes. We have been unable to actually pick much of the low-hanging fruit that exists in our tax system. I'll give you one example, and I know, you know, why it's not on the ballot. That we're the only place in the world that doesn't tax oil as it's coming out of the ground, the only state in the country that doesn't do that. The proposals specifically on higher education have been to do an oil severance tax to pay for higher ed. At these oil prices, it's about $2 billion. It could be $1.5 billion or $1 billion. But a chunk of change that is low-hanging fruit left on the table during this, you know, oil run-up, we're really leaving money on the table, and we can't do it. Why? Because of two-thirds vote in the legislature, but also because it would cost Chevron alone $300 million a year so they could finance a campaign with 1 year's cost of this check and mail and call everybody in the state of California for $300 million.
So going back to this particular tax proposal, Mark Paul, this tax proposal would raise sales taxes by a quarter cent and raise taxes for people earning more than $250,000 a year. How much would this proposal raise if it passes, and how significant is it in the overall revenue picture?
Well, it would. There's some disagreement between the governor and the legislative analyst about how much it raises. But if you use the legislative analyst number, it's about $5.5 billion a year, and which, you know, is amounts to, you know, roughly equivalent to about that's equivalent to about 8%. Of this, or actually 7% of the state's overall revenue. So it's basically the amount raised is roughly equivalent to what we currently spend per year on the two higher education university segments, UC and CSU. So it's a contribution to closing the to the state's structural budget deficit, but you know, basically the amount it raises is only sufficient to temporarily stabilize, you know, the state's budget at the current low levels of spending. So we get no real improvement we can't restore the cutbacks that have been made over the last several years, but it would prevent the state from having to make another round of cuts.
So 7% of the overall budget, overall revenue, this campaign needs 800,000 signatures by next month. They're paying about $3 per signature. And before we get into the details about what this will look like and, you know, who's in favor, who opposes this, where does the rest of the state's revenue come from?
Well, the income tax is a big chunk of the state's revenue. Personal income tax is about $50 billion on a $90 or $100 billion budget. We have the sales tax is about, I guess it's up above $30 billion. The corporation tax has been declining and is around $10 billion. So there's roughly your $90 billion. There's some other taxes in there. And then the property tax, which you know, the state, it's been a great frustration to me as someone trying to work on property tax reform, is that the Department of Finance and the legislative analysts don't pay much attention to the property tax because it's seen as a local tax. But in fact, much of the property tax backs at you that's collected locally goes to schools, and it relieves the state budget of an equivalent amount that would otherwise go to schools. So the property tax is a part of the of state budget considerations. And I think I probably overestimated the state share of the sales tax, because a good chunk of the sales tax, 2.5% or so, goes to local governments, including counties.
And Mark, what else do we need to know about where state revenue comes from?
Well, I mean, that is, as Lenny laid out, the major elements of it. It is because the income tax represents a large share of the state's revenues, and because California has a progressive income tax with higher income people paying higher amounts, that the state revenue is susceptible to ups and downs in the economy. So it tends to throw off a lot of money at times, which, for instance, in the two big asset bubbles that we had, the dot-com boom in the 90s, and then the housing bubble in the last decade, it tends to throw off a fair amount of money in good times like that, and then retreat sharply in downturns like the Great Recession that we just went through in 2007 through 2009.
And that is journalist Mark Paul, who's co-author of the book California Crack Up, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How We Can Fix It. We're also joined by Lenny Goldberg, executive director of the California Tax Reform Association. And today we are talking about the tax measure that's a compromise between California Governor Jerry Brown, the California Federation of Teachers, labor unions, and students. There were two competing measures. There was a lot of infighting. So they got together and came up with this compromise that would raise sales taxes by a quarter cent and raise taxes for people earning more than $250,000 a year. So this means that there will now be Lenny, will there now be two tax measures on the ballot, or are there's also another one where they're trying to get the oil tax on the ballot?
Well, there
right?
are. There are actually no. The oil tax is not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere. But let me correct one thing that I really disappointed in the Brown administration, the way they framed their tax proposal. The fact is that the tax proposal should be discussed, and the legislative analyst actually says this, as affecting, leaving aside the sales tax, a quarter cent, on the income tax side, it affects basically the top 1%. And for the most part, it's incomes over $500,000. It runs at $500,000 goes up, and then goes up it's to $600,000, and then over $1 million. And the $250,000 is only for single taxpayers. There are not that many single taxpayers in the $250,000 to $500,000 range. And so really the impact on this is on the top one, and I think that's the way it really needs to be framed. It's a little bit more than the top 1% because a few single taxpayers fall under $400,000, which represents the top 1%. But basically it falls on the top 1% of taxpayers, as the legislative analyst said. There will be possibly two other tax measures on the ballot. One of those is by attorney Molly Munger, who has a $10 billion income tax increase across the board, affecting all taxpayers, somewhat progressive, but a fairly major hit on middle-income taxpayers, to go entirely to schools and to provide no relief for the state budget. That $10 or $11 billion is really problematic. It would improve schools and early childhood. There's no question about it, but it would essentially say, this is all the tax increasing we're ever going to do for at least quite some period of time, and it's only going to school, so everyone else, including higher ed, will suffer. The other tax measure, and I've been working with the folks, and they're talking to Jerry Brown, is one that would eliminate a corporate loophole that no one can defend, that Jerry Brown tried to eliminate in the budget, and there's another $1 billion of low-hanging fruit on the table. Venture capitalist Tom Steyer is collecting signatures as we speak, and they are trying to work directly with the governor to figure out whether or not this measure will impact and interfere with the government, with the prime, you know, with the number one priority, which is the compromise tax measure, or whether it will be in addition to, because that $1 billion, which gives out-of-state corporations the choice about how they file their taxes, it was a middle-of-the-night mistake. Everybody admits it's a mistake, but the legislature has been unable to address it. There are several bills on the subject, so there could be the Munger tax initiative, the Brown tax initiative, and the Steyer, or we should say corporate loophole closing initiative. And that depends. The governor is looking at that and will make a decision whether he thinks they should submit their signatures or not.
All right. So a possibility of three measures on the ballot in November. And we'd love to hear from you if you have any questions about these measures specifically. Do you support them? We're talking about what happens if they don't pass. And then we will talk about if the Jerry Brown measure passes, how will this money be distributed? We'll also talk about that. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you have any questions about this overall process, as Mark Paul said, it's really just a quick fix. This really does nothing to alleviate these problems long term. And have you been approached by people asking for signatures? I was on BART a couple days ago, and I was approached by someone asking for five signatures on five different ballots. On this Jerry Brown compromise, they're paying about $3. And then on the Molly Munger tax measure, Michael Arno, whose company is spearheading the drive to qualify this one, he's giving away a car each week in a drawing involving top signature gatherers. Lenny, has this ever been done before?
Oh, I think it's been done before. They do all these incentives, and it's quite an industry out there. You have crew chiefs, and you have the various people out on the street, and they collect this, and it all goes up in a kind of pyramid process. So they get all the signatures, they check the signatures, they submit the signatures, and it probably makes sense, you know, when you're talking about a $2 or $3 million ballot drive, you know, to a $10 or $20,000 car each, you know, for the crew chiefs, sure.
I thought it was one car for the whole campaign.
Oh, maybe so.
No, but it is a week. I just, according to SACB, they're giving a car away every week.
Uh-huh. They're trying to motivate those people to get out there. And, yeah, that's a, you know, it's just a question. Is it how many dollars? We've seen very, very high signature gathering. You know, that's how government is done in the state of California, for not for better or worse, for worse. I think it's fairly clear.
And Mark Paul, before we get to calls, if this measure passes, we're talking about $5.5 billion. How will this money be distributed?
Well, it will go in. Basically, it's money for the general fund. I mean, it's the packaging. And Brown is being fairly disingenuous about this. I mean, the measure is drawn, you know, to say that all the money is going to public safety and to schools, when in fact it backs out, it makes possible to back out other money. So this is basically a measure that goes, you know, gives the state an infusion of revenue, which will, you know, we use to close the existing gap in the state budget for a number of years, and then it has a cliff. So it funds things for the income tax lasts for 7 years, and then it goes back to where it was before, and we end up with another big budget deficit again. So this is, like a lot of the other things we've done in California, this is a way of kicking the can down the road for Governor Brown to, you know, in 2004, when Arnold Schwarzenegger came in, he borrowed $15 billion to get through the budget crisis, money which we were still paying back. You know, we kicked the can down the road then. This is Jerry Brown's version of kick the can down the road.
Well, I'm going
to
take a
temporary tax increase to you know, which has a cliff at the end, which leaves us again to figure out how we're going to fund basic services in California.
Yeah, I'm going to take a little issue with that, only that, you know, the kicking the can down the road done by Schwarzenegger was entirely borrowing.
Oh, yes, I agree.
And this at least pays for us through this period of time, so it's not just saying we're going to borrow from the future and hope it gets better. That said, my hope, and, you know, and I may retire before then, but hopefully not, is that, you know, coming up on the 7-year period where the, you know, when the tax, the quarter cent and the top brackets drop off, that I am hoping there will be a very fertile discussion of tax reform. There already are, you know, a number of people talking about it between now and then that will get us to some permanent solution. So I think the kicking the can down the road in this case, we have real money on the table, but we are, you know, still postponing the day when we actually fix our tax system.
Right. But if Lenny's going to take objection, let me just correct one thing he said about the,
okay,
about the Munger initiative, which is
you know what, Mark, we're actually going to take a quick break, and okay, I want you to have time to explain this because that's important. So we're going to take a quick break. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. This is a very important issue. The Cal State University system says if the Jerry Brown compromise does not pass in November, they will not admit new students next year. So as it stands, we might have 3 tax proposals on the ballot. If you have any questions about them, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this.
KALW has a live MP3 stream. You can find us in the public radio listing on iTunes. And if you have an iPhone, you can listen to us via the new Public Radio Tuner application. Learn more at KALW.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org. You can find links there, listen to past shows, share the show, and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about how safe our drinking water is. We'll be talking about what's in our water and what chemicals should we be most concerned about. Are filters necessary? How do they work? Do they work? And then we'll have a conversation on Thursday about another initiative to repeal the death penalty in California. It'll be the third time California has voted on this issue. We'll also be discussing the history of the death penalty in California. That's Thursday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about tax initiatives that are will possibly be on the November ballot if they can gather enough signatures. Governor Jerry Brown compromised with the California Federation of Teachers, unions, and students on this particular measure that would raise sales taxes by a quarter cent and raise taxes for people earning more than $250,000 a year. The California State University System says if this measure does not pass, they will not accept new students in the 2013 school year. So if you have any questions about this, you can give us a call. We've got full lines. We'll have a free line in just a minute, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Mark Paul, co-author of California Crack Up, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How We Can Fix It. And Lenny Goldberg is executive director of the California Tax Reform Association. And Mark, I just want to take a caller before we talk more in depth about Molly Munger's tax measure, because a few of our callers have to leave. So let's hear from Gabriella in Richmond. Hi, Gabriella. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Great show. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just have a question for Lenny. Is the millionaire's tax initiative dead in the water? And what should we be gathering signatures for this corporate loophole tax, and how would it affect to have both of them on the ballot?
I couldn't hear it that well, but gathering about the corporate loophole tax, that one is on the one that closes the so-called elective loophole in the in the corporation tax, which allows out-of-state companies to choose to pay lower taxes, which will, and hurt harms a potential, arguably a potential incentive for investing in California. That one, I'm not sure if they have a volunteer effort in terms of carrying signatures. I do know they have a paid effort and are on their way to getting enough signatures to qualify for the ballot. Did that answer the question? Because I couldn't hear it very well.
That was the second part of the question. The first part was, what's the status now of the millionaire's tax? This was the original proposal supported by the California Federation of Teachers.
Yeah, that has been dropped in favor of the Jerry Brown tax. That was why they talk about it as a compromise. It focuses more heavily on the top brackets. It does. It really does tax the 1%, and that effort has been rolled into the single measure. The other major compromise was that Brown had 4 or 5 years in his proposal, and this jumped it up to 7. It did continue the quarter cent in sales tax, and that was important because of the payment, the guaranteed payment in the Brown initiative to local governments as well for the current realignment program.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Gabriella. And Mark, what did you want to add about the Molly Munger tax measure, which, again, just so everybody's clear, it would raise income rates on all but the poorest taxpayers?
Right. I think Lenny was being unfair to say it has no impact on the budget. And in fact, in the initial year,
the Munger
PTA initiative raises about $3 billion, at least $3 billion, probably more a year that goes to paying off the state's accumulated budget debt, various kinds of debt service, etc. So it would contribute some to the budget crisis, but the Munger initiative is more, unlike Brown, is more ambitious. Brown's initiative basically is a stopgap designed to stop the bleeding right now. Mm-hmm. Munger proposes to raise about twice as much revenue, and which would after the initial years in which some would go to helping the state budget, would eventually go entirely to school districts and not to the state, and it would be distributed heavily focused at the school site on and heavily focused on lower income children in the state. So it's not just a tax budget measure. The Munger is an educational policy initiative as well. So,
okay.
Right, and I am corrected on that. The original version did nothing
right,
to the budget,
right.
But they did amend that.
Okay, so again, the Jerry Brown compromise would raise $5.5 billion a year, and the Munger initiative would raise about $11 billion a year.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the calls. And we have full lines, so let's go to our next caller, Antonia in San Francisco. Hi, Antonia. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning. Good morning, Rose. Good morning, everyone. I've always loved the show.
Thank you.
And I'm so glad you're talking about progressive revenue. It's one of the most important issues facing our state, obviously. I just wanted to add, because it doesn't seem to have been mentioned, that what you're calling the Brown Compromise Initiative was actually a compromise with the coalition that originally sponsored the Millionaire's Tax, which included California Calls, which is a statewide alliance of grassroots organizations that represent low-income communities of color. And those organizations who collectively represent tens of thousands of grassroots organizers and, I mean, grassroots members, working families all over the state, are supporting this compromise. And so calling it just the Brown Compromise isn't quite right. There's quite a bit of on-the-ground support because it was a very difficult decision, I know, for that alliance to make that decision to support the compromise. But they did so because it is because the progressiveness of it and the fact that it ultimately will raise more money. And so I just wanted to add that voice that there's this, incredible coalition that is behind it, that it's not just a compromise with the teachers union.
That's correct.
Right.
That's correct. I worked closely. This is Lenny. I worked closely with that coalition. It was very powerfully organized. I do think in calling this you're correct, the Brown Compromise. Brown will lead out the campaign, but so will there be many, many grassroots supporters. And I would add to it that it really should be talked about. I mentioned this previously, as the tax on the 1%. It's not the millionaire's tax anymore,
but
the 1% is basically who it taxes.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I was actually trying to figure out how should I frame this. You've got teachers, unions, students, community organizations. I guess that's the way to do it. So there's a lot of different people involved with this compromise. And what really went on behind the scenes? Can you give us just an overall picture of what we need to know about that?
Well, I think the simple way to say it is that everybody recognized that going competitively was not going to, really had problems. There was an awful lot of polling done. And, you may say, I prefer this and I don't like that one. And then other people would prefer that one and not like this one. So the question of whether you could sustain a majority and for both measures and how they would interact was a real serious question. So what went on behind the scenes was to say, we know that in the polling that taxing the wealthy is the top 1% is incredibly strong. It plays very strong. It's harmful to the message that there be a half-cent sales tax out there. On the other hand, the administration felt that part of the discussions we included the business community so that it would not be overwhelmingly only on the wealthy, that there was a broad-based sharing of the tax, even though it's just a quarter cent in sales. So it was a kind of balancing among the polling and the public, as well as trying to minimize opposition as well. And that's the question, how much opposition is going to be out there.
And Tanya, are you still with us?
Yes.
How do community organizations, just based on the conversations you have with your colleagues, how do they feel about the Munger initiative?
I'm not as close to those conversations, so I don't want to misspeak, but I do know that there's quite an incredible student movement in this, in the state, and students are upset.
Right.
Students are upset, and in the ideal situation, there would be a coalition that brought together all the education activism and all the education advocates together with the human services folks and the teachers. That is not the case here, right? And so, but I think the organizations that I know, the community organizations in San Francisco Rising, for example, which organize in African American, Latino, Asian, and Filipino communities here in San Francisco, are not supporting the Munger initiative and are supporting this compromise initiative.
All right. Well,
as far as I know.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Well, we're going to do several shows about this in the coming months. So thank you so much for that. And again, the Munger initiative would raise $11 billion a year, and it would raise income tax rates on all but the poorest taxpayers. And then the Brown compromise with the community groups, schools, unions, teachers would raise $5.5 billion a year, and it would raise taxes on, is it fair to say, Lenny, top 1 to 3%?
It's really the top 1%. It might be 1.25% when I looked at the numbers, but it's mostly the top 1% plus a quarter cent sales tax.
Right, and that's very important. Okay,
and also, Rose, it's the Munger, it's not true that all except the poorest. I mean, it's generally, I mean, for instance, a couple in California with two children and $45,000 a year in income would pay nothing under the Munger initiative. So it is basically raises taxes on people from a little below the median up to the top, and it's progressive. It raises taxes on the wealthiest more than the Brown initiative does.
Okay, so what would be the cutoff, would you say, on the Munger initiative?
Generally, for a couple, it would be around the high 40s. They currently don't pay any income tax in California. They wouldn't under the Munger.
Actually, that's not quite right, because only those families with kids would be in the 40s.
Family of four.
All right, and well, there's so much misinformation out there, because the SACB is reporting it would raise income rates on everybody but the poorest taxpayers. What about single people? What would be the cutoff there?
The cutoff is very low. It's really down to the current rate. It's a small increase on people at $7,500 and the joint as at $15,000, which is pretty much where those are the old numbers, but 15 or so. It definitely goes down, and it does have an impact. For let's say a family at about $125,000 or $150,000 would probably pay $1,000 more in tax.
All right.
And that's not necessarily that much in terms of the deprivation of the schools, but at this point it's going to be a tough sell, I think.
For a median wage single worker, somebody earning $30,000, they'd pay $94 a year more under Munger.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Antonia, and let's go next to KDF in Oakland. Hi, KDF.
Hi. With Facebook recently paying $1 billion for a potential rival that has just 13 employees, why do your guests think we allow Silicon Valley, worldwide known, for its huge profits, to continually act in an un-American way, like Chevron, not paying its fair share, while we're debating raising the sales tax, which disproportionately hurts working people?
Well, Lenny Goldberg, and you're talking about Facebook buying Instagram for $1 billion.
Sure, I
didn't realize they had so few employees. Lenny, on your website, you've got a new report, High Tech, Low Tax, How the Richest Silicon Valley Corporations Pay Incredibly Low Taxes on Their Land.
Yes. The property tax system we have is ridiculous. And what's interesting in terms of follow-up to that question is that on the one hand, our corporation taxes have declined, some of the taxes on the wealthy, and I think that with this buyout of $1 billion, we will see some income taxes out of that. But the tax, Intel, is paying a grand total of $900 an acre on prime Silicon Valley land. Now, you can compare that to Google that pays $58,000 an acre, although Google also has some property that it's paying basically $1,200 an acre. The system is completely nuts. It is quite absurd, and it benefits large landholders. Acres, tens and tens, hundreds of acres in Silicon Valley are prime commercial property, and this is land alone, because sometimes they build new buildings and those get reassessed. But on hundreds of acres in Silicon Valley, people are paying values of Some of them are even agricultural values, like IBM is paying $200 an acre in tax on its land. Others are, but hundreds of acres at 1975 or 1980 values. It's in a system full of loopholes. We've documented that. You know, my question, really, it's more a question than an answer, is what is it going to take? We thought by documenting this, people would look and see how completely ridiculous our property tax system is. What is it going to take until people take notice and see how completely dysfunctional our system is? And that's the system that support cities, counties, and schools. I was frankly hoping that, you know, with the demise of redevelopment, that the city, and they are, paying much more attention to, okay, what are we going to do about the property tax? So that, you know, as far as talking about down the road, you know, we've got 7 years on this tax. What's going to happen with tax reform? You know, my hope is and my goal is and my strategy is to try to, you know, take this absurd system and make some sense out of it and provide some funding for cities, counties, and schools.
Did this report get much attention in Sacramento?
It got some attention, sure. There was a hearing. You know, we had the first ever hearing, if you can imagine, on commercial property and change of ownership. That's in 30 years or more of Proposition 13. You know, we've had a few. This was an extensive hearing at the Revenue Tax Committee. So, you know, it's going to be it's a matter of a long-term strategy in terms of making this happen. And I have to say to the questioner, you know, it's very hard to get the corporation tax fixed. You know, people say I'm crazy because we'll never get the property tax fixed. But, you know, we have to do something here, so we'll take our best shots.
And that is Lenny Goldberg, Executive Director of the California Tax Reform Association. We're also joined by Mark Paul, co-author of California Crack Up, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How We Can Fix It. And we've got just about 10 minutes left. We've got full lines. We'll try to get as many callers as we can. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. And we have an email. You can also email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org, from Anne in Berkeley, who says, your guests are downplaying the importance of the fact that the compromise includes a quarter-cent tax increase, sales tax increase, a regressive tax that will add to the tax burden for those of us who live in poverty. The original millionaire's tax did not include an increase in the sales tax. The constant refrain is, well, it's just a quarter cent, but that gets us up to a solid 10% on all sales other than food. For very low-income people, another addition to our regressive tax system is nothing short of outrageous. And thank you for the email, Anne. We have a related call from Ruth Ann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruth Ann. Ruth Ann? Sorry, I guess we lost Ruth Ann. Sorry about that. So, Mark, Anne makes a good point. For people who are barely getting by, who cannot make ends meet, this sales tax hike is significant.
Well, it's certainly yes for people who are low income or have no income. You know, a sales increase in the sales tax is regressive, I don't know exactly why it is relatively small. It's only a quarter cent. I don't know why, given how little revenue is involved, why Brown left it in there. But it certainly makes it more difficult messaging, because this is his plan will raise taxes on everybody in California to some extent.
Lenny?
Well, it does make it difficult. I think the reason for it is that in terms of the sales tax, they wanted a stable source of revenue that they could say would go to this major realignment that the governor has done. And I have to say, you got to appreciate the elimination of redevelopment. I think that was very, you know, although there are dislocations at the local areas, it was positive for the state of California. The major realignment of prisoners coming out of the state prisons and going into the county jails, you know, is a big structural change that takes and requires funding. And I think that the logic of the Brown administration was, let's get this additional quarter cent sales tax and put that towards a guarantee that we are making to local government that we're going to pay for that movement of prisoners from state to county jails.
Well, we have Ruth Ann back on this sales tax. Hi, Ruth Ann.
Hi there. I had a comment and a question. The question is clarification. Is the quarter cent sales tax increase a quarter percent or a quarter cent? I get confused on that, meaning if the sales tax, where I am in the East Bay, is 8.75% in Berkeley, does it go up to 9%, which would be a quarter
yes.
percent?
Yes. It will be essentially a quarter cent on a dollar, which means that one more cent on $4 spent.
Okay. That's the clarification I want to know. But also was a comment I would address to Lenny, is I heard on alternative radio on Monday, Richard Wolf talking about the tax code, and he proposed a progressive sales in fact tax increase, which would potentially, let's just say for hypothetical numbers, on the first $100, it would be 1%. On anything over $5,000, it would be, say, 5%, meaning progressively increase the percent of tax paid on sales tax.
Lenny?
Yeah, I'm not sure. A progressive sales tax, was that what
you
mentioned?
Right.
You know, it's the more you draw lines in the tax system, the more people scramble to get on the other side of them. So that, you know, a $5,000 might be a pretty cheap car, a rent, you know, a used car. So it may or may not affect the wealthy who are spending more money. You know, we do exempt food. We do, and some people argue that there are an awful lot of high-end food that, you know, benefits the wealthy in that exemption. We do exempt housing. We do exempt medical care. I actually think that there are many things in the taxes, in the sales tax, that could where you could greatly broaden the base. Things like ski lift tickets and golf courses and entertainment and professional sports are all, you know, misclassified, as far as I'm concerned, as services. And then, of course, there are major efforts to try to say, let's tax services, including business services, or some of them don't include business services. But I think part of the discussion of sales tax reform is to broaden the base and lower the rates so that those lower rates on ordinary things that families buy, they go down. Some things that are bought as services and more high-end and high-priced are at least should be taxed. I don't know that you can do a graduated sales tax, but you certainly can broaden the base and lower the rate.
All right. Well, thank you for the email, for the phone call. We have an email from Charlotte who says, I'm sure I'd like to sign the tax increase initiatives you're all discussing. Where can I read the text and sign an initiative when it's convenient for me rather than depending on signature gatherers? So I just realized I didn't even mention the name of this thing, but it's called Schools and Local Public Safety Protection Act of 2012. And you can find information about it and sign the petition at protectschoolsandpublicsafety.org. protectschoolsandpublicsafety.org, and you can find that also at yourcallradio.org. And we have just a couple minutes left.
Secretary of State also, and the legislative analyst.
Okay, and we'll put the other measures up also. Lenny, who's opposing this measure?
You know, I know that the Jarvis folks are, and
right.
Mark, you may know more, the Jarvis folks oppose all taxes.
Right.
The Republicans, if they didn't oppose all taxes, they would have voted some of these more reasonable tax increases in the legislature, and we wouldn't be in this situation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I expect the entire Republican Party, I expect the Jarvis and anti-tax folks that we know that they are going to oppose it. And I guess the question is how much money they will have, because it's a lot easier to get a no vote than a yes vote, particularly on a tax measure. Mm-hmm. And if there is business money going into it some rich person's money, then it will be in more trouble than it looks like right now.
And Mark, the other problem is if you've got three measures, it's going to confuse people. And they're not going to know what to vote on, and they might get irritated and vote no, which is what happens regularly.
There is a big potential for that. And we don't know exactly what is going to finally end up on the ballot. But
right.
I also anticipate that, you know, the Brown Initiative, if it qualifies, will attract national attention. I suspect that for Republican anti-tax groups around the country that they will fight very hard, because California, just as it was, you know, it was the, we were the leading wave in 1978 of the national tax revolt, I think they probably would fear that California could be the leading wave of a direction back in, into increasing taxes on high-income earners.
And again, these campaigns all still need hundreds of thousands of signatures by mid-May to qualify for the ballot. According to a recent USC poll, nearly two-thirds of California voters support the Jerry Brown Teachers Union grassroots organization measure. And we've got a minute left. What's really at stake here, Lenny Goldberg?
Well, you know, I think Mark just said it. It's not just the ability to resolve our budget crisis, or at least temporarily put off our, the depth of our budget crisis. So those are, you know, what's really at stake are very real school services, higher education issues, very real, that direct, that directly affect people. Just as important is the notion that, you know, that the public will take the position that we cannot run a government without having a reasonable discussion of taxation. Hmm. You know, it's like the great frustration of my entire work life has been you can barely even have the discussion because we're structurally so tied in knots. So it's both the reality of the services that will be provided and the message that gets sent.
And Mark Paul, what would you add to that 20 seconds?
Well, certainly, if they don't pass, we'll see, you know, even deeper budget cuts. Passing is, you know, stabilizes it. A low level, you know, failure would probably mean much deeper budget cuts.
Well, it can't get any deeper than the California state system saying they're not going to accept new students next year.
Yes,
if this
it can.
Initiative,
yes, it can.
It can.
Well,
cutting off welfare is going to, looks like a lot of that's going to happen anyway, you know, so it keeps going down.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Lenny Goldberg with the California Tax Reform Association, Mark Paul, author of California Crack Up. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for your phone calls and emails. You can find more information about these initiatives at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. How safe is your drinking water? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about what's in our water. In Tulare County, one of the poorest counties in California, the State Water Resources Control Board found that 75% of the wells tested contained at least one contaminant. So do you know what's in your drinking water? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What chemicals should we be most concerned about? Are filters necessary, and how do they work? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor, and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.